The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
But first, two very important questions. Have you ever tried to stack marbles while wearing boxing gloves? Also, did you know that marigolds and geraniums hate each other?
Absolutely.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. My calendar tells me that it's Monday, the 20th of April, and who can forget to wish happy birthday to Adolf Hitler? I think he was born in 1878, which would make him, 142 years young had he lived, had he not killed himself in a cowardly fashion in the bunker.
In a bunker.
Funny. Now, Chris Himes, you remember this. Alvin, I don't know if you remember this, but when this program started, do you guys know today, 5 years ago today,
that's right,
this program started? Wow. And when they told me the start date of the program, April 20th, I said, April 20th, you sure? They go, yeah, that's the date. Salem Media, the brass at Salem Media. They gave me that as the date. And I said, well, I happen to know that that's Hitler's birthday. I don't know if I really want to start on Hitler's birthday, but there was no choice. These guys are all Nazis. No, just kidding. Yeah. But they said, sorry, that's the date. So I said, I know what I'm going to do for my first interview. And Chris, I know you remember this.
Alvin's got a cake.
I'm going to have on.
I got a candle here.
I'm going to have on Alice von Hildebrand.
Oh, yeah.
Alice von Hildebrand.
Yeah.
She's now about 95. So 5 years ago, she was only 90, a child of 90. But Alice von Hildebrand, her husband, who passed away around 1980, he was one of the number one enemies of Nazism in Europe. The Nazis tried to kill him. His name's Dietrich von Hildebrand. He was a tremendous hero. And I thought, what a cool thing for my first show on Hitler's birthday to have as my guest the widow of one of the great celebrated enemies of Hitler and National Socialism. So take that, you nutty Nazis. And that's 5 years ago. So,
Eric, you want to blow out the you want to blow out the candle, Eric? Here it is.
I'm going to try.
Try.
I can't believe that we have the technology where I can do that.
That's wild.
Yeah, I remember when she came to the show, and she was adorable.
She is adorable.
She was talking to her husband, speaking about this lion-hearted man and how he was the only one that, you know, was kind of man enough to stand up against Hitler.
Oh, he was. I mean, I'm telling you, Dietrich von Hildebrand, huge hero. And Alice von Hildebrand, huge hero. But I don't want to forget to tell my audience who we have on today. Enough about 5 years ago. Today we have on Diana West. She is another kind of hero. She writes about communist infiltration of the United States and of the European West. And we haven't had her on in a while, obviously, because of the format we're using. We'll have her on video so you can see her while we have our conversation. Very important conversation about what is happening with China right now. It's gruesome stuff. We're basically at war. And we're also internally at war in the United States because we have a lot of people here who either don't understand what's at stake and are siding with the enemy, or who sort of do understand what's at stake and are siding with the enemy. I hate to put things in such draconian terms, but you listen to the conversation that I will have with Diana West and you can decide for yourself. We've got her for most of both hours today. Also, we will have on our friends at the Alliance Defending Freedom in hour two. We're talking to one of our friends at the Alliance Defending Freedom, Ryan Tucker, about what's been going on. People are getting arrested in Mississippi for having drive-in church services. It is an outrage. We will discuss sit. God bless Alliance Defending Freedom. Okay, guys, I got a couple quick things I have to share. The other day, yesterday, I was running in New York City, as I often do. I wasn't running from the law. I was just running for my health. And I suddenly realized that I'm on the same block as the Abyssinian Baptist Church, where Bonhoeffer's life was changed up in Harlem. Wow. It is there. It's been a church for all these years. And 90 years later, I'm standing in front of the church. So I made a short video of myself and I put it on Twitter and on Facebook if you want to see what I look like when I'm all sweaty and running. But I got to tell you, it was such a cool thing to pass by this dramatically historic spot where 90 years before, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was attending services, teaching Sunday school, and having his life changed so that he understood that being a man of Christian faith means action. It doesn't just mean words. It means living a life of action. So, of course, when he went back to Germany in the following year, or I should say 1931, he was different. People could see that he was different. His experience with the true Christians in the Black Church in Harlem was something that just changed him forever. And he really said that he only saw faith in New York in the Black churches, that the mainstream Protestant churches had already effectively wed themselves to the zeitgeist. And they're still wed to the zeitgeist, which will eventually die and they'll be widows, as predicted by some clever person. I can't remember who. So that really was an amazing thing. But even more amazing to me is that while I was on my run, I was listening to this radio program, because I sometimes listen to this program when I'm running just to see. And we played an encore with the son of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Ignat Solzhenitsyn. If you missed that, folks, yes, thank you, Alvin. Alvin's holding up my book, Seven More Men.
It just came in the mail from my copy. Just came in the mail. I'm not kidding. Like 2 hours ago, I just picked it up.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, thank you for patronizing my my work.
I got to start reading it.
And thank you for being patronizing in general.
I know I am.
I was just patronizing then when I said that.
Thank you.
But seriously, the seventh man the sixth man in my book, my new book, Seven More Men, is Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And so to have the privilege, seriously, folks, huge privilege, to speak to his son, who lives in New York. He's a brilliant musician. If you missed that, you can find it on our YouTube page. We will put it out. I guess we put it out in our e-blast this week, but it was an amazing conversation. Some of the stuff that he said, I forget. I mean, this is many months ago. And so on my run, I'm refreshing my memory of this conversation, listening. And I thought, what a conversation. Alvin, please make a note. We've got to get him back ASAP. I mean, honestly, when we get back in the studio, we've got to get him back on to talk about.
Yeah, believe it or not, I've been bugging him about that. So hopefully we'll get him shortly or, you know.
Right on.
Yeah, right on, man. Right on.
Cool. But it's funny that I spoke to the son of the sixth man in my book, and I spoke to the son of the seventh man in my book, Franklin Graham. That was on TBN this weekend. If you missed that, that was a particularly good show.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I talked to the Benham brothers on TBN. Okay, what else do we have to cover before it's too late? Greek Easter.
Greek Easter.
We had some lamb. I actually had to drive, and we didn't go very far from Danbury, Connecticut, so we did put an appearance with my folks who there's no way I'm not going to see my dad on Greek Easter. We wore masks, but faith can transcend medical masks. And it was just great to see my mom and dad.
Now, you weren't arrested for meeting because it was a church event.
No.
Easter. No. No. Okay. Just want to be sure.
No. But okay. So today, when we talk to Diana West, we're going to carry that on into the second hour. And then in hour two, we will speak to our friends at the Alliance Defending Freedom. That stuff just gets me so angry. I thank God for the Alliance Defending Freedom. I also want to say that a big thank you to all of our sponsors. You know, this is a tough time, folks. If ever there were a time to patronize, you know, Honor Bound Coffee or MyPillow.com, You can imagine that they're going through it. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Diana West. Don't go away.
I thought the major was a lady. Suffering, yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I made time. One jet.
Folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's a show. It's entertaining. It's informative. It's a lot of things. It's even on YouTube if you'd prefer to actually see the people involved. I am waiting for my hair to dry. This is a very hard season we're going through, not being able to get a haircut. I have as my guest, as you already know, very excited about this, Diana West. Welcome to the program.
Oh, wonderful to be back with you, Eric. I'm waiting for my hair to dry, too.
It's really tough. We're living in tough times. Listen, Diana, you, you're most famous, I guess, for your book, The Red Thread. But you write about communism and how communist influences are still with us, still infiltrating the West and the United States. And I wanted to talk to you. I saw you someplace recently talking about China and what we're going through. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to get you on? So here you are.
Yes, here I am. Yes, well, The Red Thread is certainly the most recent work, but it really is Son of American Betrayal, which is the big, deep dive into communist influence inside America, directed at that time, earlier in the 20th century, primarily from Moscow, from the Kremlin. And now we are in the 21st century, and we are looking at Chinese influence in a new way, aren't we? We're looking at Chinese influence in all manner of unconventional warfare tactics and money and media and all the rest of it. So it's a good topic.
Part of the problem, let me see if I can frame it a little bit. I think we were all trained by the West and by America when we were kids, in Cold War thinking, that the Soviet Empire is in fact evil, that they are godless, that they're wicked, that they're ingenious, and that we're in a high stakes war with them for everything. Because of the way China has emerged historically, more recently, because of what I think of the idiocy of the, trying to make money, that our greed sort of gave them an opening by giving them most favored nation status in the late 90s under Clinton. And so that we don't see them. We have not seen them the way we saw the Soviet Union. It's not quite the same. We've kind of thought of them, and maybe I'm speaking for myself, but that we thought of them as potentially friends, that potentially they're opening up to our way of things, that things aren't so bad there anymore. Obviously, they're not in the middle of the Cultural Revolution under Mao, and it's a new day. But it seems to me that what we're discovering right now is that if anything, that it maybe never has been a new day, number one. And number two, maybe it was sort of a new day, but we have moved dramatically backwards, and that they seem to be operating now the way the Soviets were operating, you know, at the height of their evil power and desire to destroy the West.
Well, I would say that, well, I don't know where you were trained, but I was trained to think we were all alike and that there was no evil empire until, of course, Ronald Reagan took great heat for telling us that. I believe it was in 1983 in a speech that was a game changer in the sense of he actually called them out. China and Russia, Soviet Union and Communist China, People's Republic of China, have never been in a new day, but that has always been the vector of disinformation that has essentially enveloped us and all of our leadership and all of our academia. And all, you know, this has been the disinformation wars that we have been struggling with going back really 100 years. And when we look at communist China going forward from 1949, that in and of itself was a big information war when we were told by our media and the left and the, you know, public square that Mao was an agrarian. No kidding. I mean, this was back in the day. We were told it was a new day with Mao. So these things recur just as you know, Stalin was our friend. And then we went through different phases of detente and people coexistence. All of these tools of disinformation.
Okay, but you're much more familiar with this. And I'm purposely wanting to take this to the level of my ignorance, because I think that it's important. In other words, what's the general sense? And part of what I want to ask you first is your own biography. We both attended Yale. Okay.
Yes.
Now at Yale, you know, that's where I, for the first time in my life, drank the Kool-Aid of the left and began to be open to that way of thinking, because my father, who you know, grew up in Greece where they fought the communists after World War II, and my mother, who was raised in East Germany, they had a very, very strong view that of the communists as evil. So my question is, when you say you didn't really come to understand these things till Reagan said what he said, in what milieu were you raised?
Well, I was speaking more generally about the American people in terms of the public square and discourse. In other words, that these narratives have been muscled over us. I grew up in Hollywood, the daughter of a writer who was very conservative in the 1960s. And so I lived through culture wars that were going on downstairs at my parents' dinner table, because my dad was fending off all of his Hollywood friends who were very much on the left. He had started more or less on the left as a kid. I mean, he voted for Franklin Roosevelt in Europe as a soldier during World War II and moved right, became a conservative probably by about 1960, I'm guessing. So he came over early in that sense. But in terms of what I was just trying to say was that China and communist China and communist Russia have always used disinformation to make people feel like it's a new day. Going back to Lenin, when in the 1920s, when he declared communism was over, and this was another effort, an early successful effort to get Western investment. We have essentially seen this throughout the century in both China and Russia, using our media, using our politics in order to gain investment, military technology, dual use technology, all manner of scientific exchange, quote unquote. All of these things are tools to them. So all I was really trying to say was that they're not different. And we are really seeing just new cycles in the same disinformation wars, which it's hard to remember if you're not studying it. And I would generally say we were not taught that in our schools growing up in the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Well, what I mean, just to be very, very general, we know that, you know, in the 50s, for example, because of the nuclear threat, that there was a sense that our enemy is Russia or the Soviet Union. You know, Sputnik was the shot across our bow, that was always there. The Cold War was there. We wanted to put a man on the moon, in a sense, to punch the Soviets in the head, you know, that it had no, there was no other reason, in a sense, to go to the moon. If you watch the James Bond movies, that it was part of a culture that they're the godless enemy. And of course, you know, if your father's a writer in Hollywood, you're hanging around people who think that that's foolishness and that we should open up to the Soviets. I mean, I remember reading something about Cheever, John Cheever, and some Russian poet. And, you know that the intelligentsia, you know, from from Lillian Hellman all the way up, they've been ridiculous. But generally, the American people, I think, when you say godless communism, they get that. But when you're talking about China today, that narrative doesn't really exist at all in the way that the godless communist narrative existed with regard to Russia. At least that's how I see it.
Well, you know, it kind of comes in and out of vogue, you might say. And certainly the James Bond movies were very careful not to have a designated Soviet villain, even if we sort of knew that. I mean, this was another exercise, really, in obfuscation and detente. It's an ongoing problem because reality tends to be obscured. And I would say that while anti-communists always looked at communism as godless and destructive, we've always had a cleavage in our country between the anti-communists and the left. They used to call them anti-anti-communists, people who thought anti-communism was the obstacle between us and this new day, as you earlier mentioned. Living in harmony in this universal world where we would essentially converge. And this, of course, goes back to the ideology of Franklin Roosevelt, who actually saw convergence of the free West and the communist system as an ideal. So we've essentially been doing that all this time, but now we're at a point where China has emerged. You're correct in saying that we weren't looking. We were thinking that, oh, if China became capitalist, it would naturally become a friend. It would naturally become peace-loving. And of course, we have seen that is a false narrative and did not happen. When we look
Diana, we're going to go to a break here, okay, but we've got the rest of the hour. Folks, I'm talking to Diana West. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. This is very important. We're going to be talking about current events when we return. Please don't go away.
Hey, folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss, like, playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Heroes and role models have always been tremendously important to me. In my new book, Seven More Men, I tell the uplifting and inspiring stories of Martin Luther, George Whitefield, William Booth, George Washington Carver, Sergeant Alvin York, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and Billy Graham. Each of these men had the courage to surrender themselves to a higher purpose for the sake of others. Become acquainted with these seven incredible heroes and your life will be immeasurably richer. Order your copy of Seven More Men today. For more info, go to my website, EricMetaxas.com.
Hey there, folks. We're back with Diana West and the Eric Metaxas Show. Diana, right now, what do you see happening? And do you think, it's gruesome to think it, but do you think that what my friend John Zmirak wrote is correct, that this Wuhan virus is, in a way, Red China's Pearl Harbor, that they have struck the West through this virus?
I think that it is very true that it has been used, at the very least, China has used Wuhan virus as a biological weapon against the world. And I say that regardless of whether it was released from their labs accidentally or on purpose, because once it was out, China did nothing to stop it going to the rest of the world. And indeed, the flights continued and the lies started and the sort of ancillary agencies, the World Health Organization and so on, essentially covered for what was going on in China. And we're certainly passing along what China said as if it were fact.
But the media, the mainstream media right now, and I have to say, I have never been quite as shocked and sickened as to see 2 days ago, the New York Times said that Trump is going to use China as the scapegoat in this. And I thought to myself, honestly, it's one thing to have a different point of view, but the idea that they're not culpable on a number of levels.
Sure.
Just, it's a magnificent misreading of the situation. But this is, you know, above the fold New York Times. That's the creepiest thing to me, is that our press, even when things are this dramatic, when it's like a war, that they're siding with the enemy.
Well, that is very true. And this is when you start realizing what has been going on around us all of this time, not in terms of what's going on in Beijing, but what's going on in our own capital, in our own campuses, in our own media. I mean, the amount of money that is in play when China is involved, and the linkages back to Chinese research labs, back to Chinese military. I mean, go back to the Clinton years. We know for a fact that it was Bill Clinton who exchanged campaign finance money coming from the Chinese military in exchange for declassification. Remember Loral? We had missile technology coming from the United States going into the Chinese military, to a point where I believe it was said that before Clinton, the Chinese military could not have a missile hit the side of a barn. And after Clinton, we have a world-class military. I mean, this has been going on for quite some time. That is when China ascended to the World Trade Organization. Very important point that Bill Clinton was able to muster through. So this has been going on for some decades in terms of this exchange. But now, as you note, our media is parroting Chinese propaganda. Part of the problem is that some of them, if we give them the benefit of the doubt, may not realize you cannot trust Communist Party mouthpieces.
This is the point, is that
they don't know that for some reason has
no sense of the existence of evil. And they think that when we say no, 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 they're actually lying, and they have a culture of lying because they don't believe in truth. The liberals don't really believe that. They want to believe the best in everyone, which to an extent is a good thing, but it's a bad thing when you really are dealing with someone who's evil, who does not believe even in good or evil. They simply believe in their own power and getting power, and will do what it takes to get it.
Well, you're describing two kinds of motivations, right? There's the useful idiot, which is Lenin's phrase for that person who doesn't realize. And then there are the actual agents of influence, the actual malign actors who have aggressive intent on our way of life or on our country. So what you are sort of describing is the old communist front set up, which is essentially an organization, the majority of whom are perfectly well-meaning, ordinary people, or people trying to do their job or advance a cause in good faith, who are essentially captive of a small or hardened cadre of organized actors who are either acting under Communist Party discipline, in the case of a communist front, whether it's foreign or domestic. Traditionally, it has come from foreign capitals. This is a major strategic asset of the communist infiltration of academia, government, theater, and the rest of it, using organizations where people don't actually realize necessarily that they are functionaries of a communist party back in Beijing or in Cuba or in Moscow and the rest of it. And we might look at certain organizations and appreciate them that way. I mean, this is why communist history, the history of infiltration and subversion in our own country, in Western societies, other Western countries, is so important to study, because none of this is simply about what happens over there in faraway countries where a dictatorship has taken hold. It's about how they advance and subvert us from within. And this is something that we have never been instructed in any sort of systematic way. And people who talk about it tend to be, throughout history, destroyed by those same voices coming from the left, who easily come up with, you know, run up the flag of conspiracy theory to shut a discussion down and make
other. 30 seconds left in this segment. I just have to ask you, when Nancy Pelosi sides with the World Health Organization over this president, I must say, I am genuinely staggered. It's really just, it's as though we are in a civil war right now.
Yes, I think we are. And I would say we've seen the same thing when Anthony Fauci from the NIH has also backstopped Dr. Tedros not the medical doctor, he's not a medical doc, but Dr. Tedros, the head of WHO. We see this inside our institutions, which are essentially globalistic in their agendas.
Correct. Well, we're going to a break. We'll be right back with Diana West. Don't go away. If I should doubt myself. Try to make it Sunday. Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Diana West. You get to listen. This is fun, Diana. It's disturbing, but it's fun to hear the truth, and it's fun to talk to someone who actually can help us understand what is happening. You just said that Dr. Fauci backstopped, as you put it, the doctor at WHO. This sounds like a cross between Dr. Seuss and a James Bond story, right? The doctor at the WHO, the World Health Organization, that Fauci somehow backed him up. I have to say, from what little I saw, the guy who's the head of WHO and someone else at WHO, they were apologists for China is an understatement. I've never seen anything like it. And it seems to me that the plug should have been pulled instantly on funding for WHO. So Trump's willingness to see this and to do this, I can't imagine him at this point not doing it. But you're telling me that Fauci doesn't get this?
I think he does get it. I mean, in the sense that I think that the institutional mindset of the National Institutes of Health and what you might think of as the medical establishment, just as our political establishment, just as our academic establishment, has a mindset, they share a mindset, which has to do with this globalist ideal where nations fade away and we end up with the whole global elite, government by elites.
It's the deep state. Let's call it the deep state. It's the medical bureaucrat. And the globalists, but you're telling me for Fauci to be that naive. In other words, we're talking about basic stuff here. China, it seems, tell me if I'm missing something. They created this in a lab, whether inadvertently or vertently. It escaped from the lab. They lied about it. Right. As a result of lying about it, thousands and thousands of people are dead. Billions, maybe trillions in wealth have been destroyed.
Right.
This is as close to an act of war as anything I've ever heard of. What am I missing?
Well, everything you said is correct. It's so much larger than that. It's so much worse than that, I hate to say, in the sense that we look at the just devastation of every nation's economy, which of course isn't just a matter of dollars and cents on a balance sheet. It's people's lives. It's people's health. It's people's world. I mean, it's everything about what makes us human has been essentially stripped from us. In our own country, our Bill of Rights has been completely nullified due in this emergency, quote unquote. But getting back to the notion of disinformation and who is spreading it, the WHO is spreading it. We've seen the NIH people essentially confirm. I mean, they'll play a game a bit, but we've seen the backstopping, as I originally said. However, we're also seeing the reliance on all kinds of the models. And, you know, we've all looked at the models and seen how inaccurate they are. But why were they so inaccurate? Look at the Imperial College modeling that came out of London that predicted 2.2 million American deaths, 500,000 British deaths. That was radically scaled down to, I believe, 60,000 British deaths. I don't know where it is at this point. I imagine it's gone lower still. The Imperial College of London has a very close working relationship with Beijing. If you go to their website, you can find it. You can see the meetings with actually Chairman Xi, the dictator of China. I mean, they have a close working relationship there. We see academics who are now calling it a conspiracy theory to think that the Wuhan virus came out of a Wuhan lab or a lab anywhere, even. They made it that blanket. Did not come out of a lab is what the mainstream media and
okay,
the
so let's leap out here and establish that in fact they are anti-science.
They are anti, yes, and I've actually
seriously.
I have decided that scientists in this of this ilk should actually be called political scientists. I don't think that the term really applies as well to philosophers of governance any longer. They are political as much as they are scientific, and I think their politics trumps their science. Look, for example, I was actually just writing about this. There's a New York Times science writer with all the right politics, so we could call him a political science writer, named Carl Zimmer. And he was tweeting the statement. It was really a press release, but they called it a statement by an Australian virologist whose name was, I believe, Professor Edward Holmes at University of Sydney, as a debunker of conspiracy theory. This was the great crowning by the New York Times of this scientist. And I read his statement. It was a press release saying no evidence. It came from a lab, period, nothing else. But I was curious about this man, Edward Holmes, and I looked at his CV, which was on the University of Sydney website, and he had a lot of august appointments and this and that, and very learned, of course. And in the middle of it, you see that he is actually has an affiliation with the Chinese CDC, and he's an honorary visiting professor at a Chinese university in Shanghai. Now, the point of this is that this is not a, given what we are, the situation we are in, this is not a nonpartisan scientific appraisal of a scientific problem. It is somebody who is colluding or collaborating in the basic sense of the world with Chinese science. So this person cannot be trusted to be giving a nonpartisan opinion of where this virus came, certainly when he's not offering any particular science about it. It's just muscling his expertise into the Twitter sphere, amplified by the New York Times science writer. And we're supposed to say, oh, that must be true then. But the thing that just happened, which is rather exciting, is that a French scientist, a virologist by the name of Luc Montagnier, who discovered HIV in 1983 and won the Nobel Prize for Medicine in 2008, he has just come out and said that he's looked at everything that he can, and his determination is that it had to come from a lab. The virus, the coronavirus, the Wuhan flu, it had to come out of a lab because of an insertion of a little bit of HIV sequencing inside the coronavirus sequencing. He says that cannot happen in nature. And so he has now taken his tremendous reputation and put it out there. Okay. And when he was asked about it, he said, I think this is the most important part of what he said, really. He said, I am a Nobel Prize winner. I am free. I have no pressure on me. I can speak.
Yes, if he hadn't yet won the Nobel Prize, maybe he'd shut up and let the world go to hell so he could get his prize. But thankfully, he has the prize. We're going to be right back talking to Diana West. You wouldn't go away, so I won't even tell you not to. Hey, folks, before we get back to Diana West, and we're also talking to Ryan Tucker today, I've just got to say again, I said it in the opener, today is Hitler's birthday. And the only reason I'm bringing that up is because yesterday I went jogging past Abyssinian Baptist Church, where one of Hitler's greatest enemies, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, used to attend. You can see my video on Twitter and on my Instagram account. But actually, no, the reason I'm mentioning it is because this is 5 years we've been doing the show as of today. So happy birthday to us, not to the Fuhrer. Let's be very clear.
If Hitler showed up at Chuck E. Cheese today, he'd qualify for some free tokens, maybe some
would
speedball.
Would he really?
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah. Okay, so I just want to say in the few seconds we have here, we have some sponsors that we care about very much. I would like to think it's not true, but it is true. They're probably going through a very tough time right now. So I wanted to kind of specially thank them, the folks at Relief Factor, who are the same people behind Honor Bound Coffee, and Mike Lindell, who, of course, is behind MyPillow.com. Actually, you know what? Can we play the video of what Mike Lindell, my hero Mike Lindell, said at the White House a few weeks ago? The press went nuts.
Yeah.
I was eating it up with a spoon.
God gave us grace on November 8, 2016 to change the course we were on. God had been taken out of our schools and lives. A nation had turned its back on God. And I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word, read our Bibles, and spend time with our families. Our president gave us so much hope where just a few short months ago, we had the best economy, the lowest unemployment, and wages going up. It was amazing. With our great president, vice president, and this administration, and all the great people in this country praying daily, we will get through this and get back to a place that's stronger and safer than ever.
Wow. What a bigot. I cannot believe that they let him say that at the White House.
What's going on?
He's just preaching hate. Hate. Why? Yeah. Hate and division. What a monster.
You can see why Christians are against him. You can see that
guy. Listen, we need 100 more Mike Lindells in every town across America. But the reason I want to play that is that he got such pushback on that. And I said, I want to play that as often as I can because that guy's my hero. And today's a good day to play it because I want to exhort you to support our sponsors. Number one sponsor, MyPillow.com. I think I've said it, perhaps once or twice, that if you go to MyPillow.com, you get our whopping super 70s groovy disco discount. It's huge. It's up to 60% or even more on some products. But go to MyPillow.com, put in the code Eric or Metaxas. But just as a way to thank Mike Lindell, if you're ever going to buy towels or pillows or pet pillows or body pillows or whatever it is that they have, they've got all kinds of, now they have flannel sheets just in time for summer. They've got flannel sheets. They've got everything there. But if you're thinking of purchasing anything from them, do it now because you know they're taking a hit. It's MyPillow.com, but you have to use the code Eric or Metaxas. And then our friends at Honor Bound Coffee, which I love and drink in the morning. We've got to ask them to make some mugs. I have an Honor Bound Coffee mug, which they sent me as an official, you know, because they're a sponsor on the program. But we've got to ask them if they're going to be able to sell those. But Honor Bound Coffee, if you go to honorboundcoffee.com, every penny that they make, and this is the relief factor people, same people, every penny they make from Honor Bound Coffee goes to support the
military families
in America. Think about that. All of their profit, 100% goes to support military families in America. Folks, honorboundcoffee.com, mypillow.com. These folks are heroes. Please support them at this time. Oh, and whatever you do, do not forget to see No Safe Spaces. Fantastic movie, nosafespaces.com. You got to go there, nosafespaces.com, and use the code SAVE25.